Welcome into a brand new Call-In, everybody. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're powered by CLNS Media, recording just past the top of the 4 o'clock hour in Boston on Tuesday, March 30th. And Lebowitz, it is opening week, opening day for baseball. It's not until Thursday, but can I say opening week? Does that count?
Is that relevant? I think you can. I'll allow it. Yeah, no, we're doing it. Opening week. It's opening week.
So there we go.
We're all excited.
Opening week, baseball is back, a full 162-game season. I think there's a case to be made, Lebowitz, correct me if I'm wrong, that baseball was affected more than any other professional sport due to COVID, right, in terms of that. I mean, we had, what was it, a 50-game schedule last year, a 60-game
schedule
last year? Right,
yeah.
Something like that. Most leagues, if anything, had maybe 10% of their season chopped off. Baseball lost more than half, so... Really, you know, the first real baseball season in like 2 years. And I'm a little excited. I will admit it. I am a little bit excited to watch baseball.
I am too. I mean, I love baseball and I get crapped on it a lot for liking baseball because it's just one of those things where in years past, they've lost a lot of people. I do think they made a good effort in speeding up the game. Overall, they're not doing that for me. I'll watch it anyway.
What did they do to speed up the game?
I just feel like they've been mentioning it. It's not really them as in the MLB. I do, at least watching the Red Sox, the limited amount I had during spring training, it appears that the pitchers are working a little bit faster. It appears that they're not dilly-dallying around.
I had noticed that, but that's good.
I noticed it subtly, and I think we're going to see them edging.
Are you sure you're not just thrown off because they're playing seven-inning games?
Maybe that's part of it. No. I feel like inning by inning, it seems like, you know, in between pitches, it's not taking quite as much time. Maybe that's just me. Maybe that's wishful thinking. I'm trying to,
Let's be positive going into this baseball season. I like that. We always approach baseball so negatively. Let's go in with a positive. Why the hell not?
Listen, I'm excited. Yeah, I mean, you started us off by saying the MLB was the most affected league last year for the Big Four. Yep. They didn't do a bubble. They had a very short season relative to what they usually have. And it was a mess between the Players Association and the league trying to figure out what they were going to do. And I think they lost. They didn't have the viewership that they usually have, which is already declining because of how it was affected due to COVID. So this year, clean slate, you had a full spring training. We're kind of getting through the thick of COVID. And with the summer coming on, we'll continue to be more and more in the clear in that department, which is going to benefit baseball for sure. And I think most people are excited to have it back. Some acquisitions, some big moves this offseason, some extensions and whatnot. And a Red Sox team that will hopefully put a more serviceable team out there on the field. I think they will. So that's going to be exciting to watch as well.
Yeah, I want to get to the Red Sox in a second. It's interesting that you mentioned, like, I don't know, maybe I'm more excited for baseball season than I am for baseball, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like, I can't wait to be sitting on the couch, windows open, sunflower seeds, just watching a game, you know, in the background while I'm doing whatever on my phone. Like, that's just, it's relaxing. I guess I'm looking forward to how relaxing it is to watch baseball. I don't know that, and maybe it's the nature of the teams this year for opposite reasons. The Bruins and Celtics have not been relaxing to watch. The Bruins, every game comes down to the final seconds, which, I mean, they've been non-relaxing in a good way. They are just playing. I mean, hockey's never, I don't know that I've ever been relaxed watching hockey. I just don't think that's the sport. And the Celtics are the Celtics. We'll get to them in a little bit. So I don't know, just, you know, sunflower seeds, you know, get myself a nice little chicken parm, feet up on the couch, having a game on, texting some people. Like, I'm looking forward to that, I guess.
Of course. I think baseball, out of all the sports, at least for me, maybe this is a personal thing. It is America's pastime, though. It's the most nostalgic.
Yes, that's a very good way to put it.
And you feel comfortable. You feel like you did when you were a kid watching the Red Sox game. You know, it'd be a random Wednesday day game, but you're like 12. You have nothing to do anyway. Right. So you're sitting on the couch. You're watching them play. And there's something relaxing about it. I think, to me, the most relaxing noise in the world, my favorite noise, is listening to the radio and just the crowd noise at like any baseball stadium and just that ambiance. It doesn't matter who's necessarily calling the game, but just baseball crowd noise, it's different than any other crowd noise. And I don't know, it like right now more than ever, I think we need that because it kind of signifies normalcy. And so now fans are going to be back in the stadium. Hopefully it opens up more and more as the season goes on. And in a weird way, this is going to represent just kind of the return to normal, I hope. And so, yeah, this is a big year. I think this is a big season for everybody just because it's going to be a little bit of a distraction. And it's going to be kind of symbolic of a nice transition, a positive one, for which will be a nice change of pace.
So just let me add, because you made a very important point in there, and I don't even know that you realize how important this is, but I don't want to let it get away from us. Baseball on the radio is greater than baseball on the TV. Baseball on radio is just, I hate people who talk about like vibes or like an aesthetic. Like, I hate those terms. But if I were to use them for anything, it's backyard, grill on, beer, baseball on the radio. Like, give me that. So yeah. I'm looking for, and I guess I should, I, you know, because it's on the station I don't work for, but I'm looking forward to listening to the Red Sox on the radio.
Of course. And, you know, I think you get a pass because Joe Castiglione has been doing this for, I mean, way longer than we've been alive. So to hear that guy, you know, on air doing his thing and, you know, just having that ambiance. And it doesn't even have to be the Red Sox, by the way. It could be any, any game.
Personally, I've been watching a decent amount of college baseball recently. The Red Sox have the fourth pick. There's a ton of talent out there right now, especially these pitchers, right? Kumar Rocker, Jack Leiter. I've been enjoying it, but I've been watching a lot of college baseball and enjoying that. But we'll do, when we get to June, we'll talk about the college baseball because there is going to be a very interesting draft. But let's talk about the Red Sox, Lebowitz. I think that we're just writing off last year. It didn't happen. Picking up, I think that the goal is to just pick up where things left off, right? Alex Cora is back. JD Martinez, Rafael Devers, who had horrible slumps all of last year. The idea is that they're back and that, you know, Cora being back will help them. There's actual major league pitching now on this roster. Alex Cora said that they're really not going to be doing bullpen days this year, which, thank goodness, those were miserable. They have not just MLB starting pitching, but depth, although we'll see kind of what's going on right now with E-Rod. But they are not – I don't know that the Red Sox are going to be a competitor. Some people say that they'll be in the running for the division. I don't think a wild card's ridiculous. Division might be a bit much. They shouldn't be a joke this year, though.
No, I think this is – I would peg them – I think their ceiling is like, I don't know, 85 to like 88 games that they win. I'd say that's their ceiling. Just right now. You never know. I mean, they have a good lineup. I think people forget about the fact that they're still a really good offensive team. You know, obviously you lose Betts, you lose Benintendi, who's been inconsistent anyway. But those two guys are big losses, let's be honest. Even without them, though, you have a couple guys who are young, who are a year older, hopefully a year better. And you do have to count on guys like JD Martinez returning to his former self. There's optimism there, and I mean, by default, their pitching staff is light years ahead of where they were last season. Last year was an embarrassment what they put there out on the field. You also hope that Chris Sale comes back sooner rather than later and can be a contributor by the end of the season. Maybe, who knows, the All-Star break, although I'm not, to be honest, I'm not familiar with the timeline of his recovery.
Sale?
Either way, this team
Are you talking about Sale?
Yeah, Sal.
With that, I they're keeping it vague. They've just kind of said summer.
Yeah.
So I think they're purposely keeping it vague right now. But I All-Star break sounds about right. I think maybe a little later. I think I've heard maybe like late July, early August.
Am I crazy for thinking that like that might end up being a good thing for the Red Sox? This is a guy who breaks down every July, yes, August of every season. To have him just for like the final 3 months of the year for a potential playoff push, because I don't think they're winning the division. I also don't think it's outlandish that they make it in a wild card spot, in a play-in game. To have him in those final months is going to be much more valuable than to have him for 3 months and then have him stink or get hurt late in the season like we're used to seeing. So that's not a horrible thing, and that's going to add a big boost, especially if this pitching staff can just be good enough. They just need to be good enough, and I think they have the pieces together to at least be over 500 by the time Chris Sale comes back. So am I optimistic that they're going to be a great team? No, but I think Coor coming back is a real factor, is a legitimate factor. It's another year of Chaim Bloom under the belt, and hopefully he can be somebody who or he can make some moves that maybe helps this roster out. Who knows? But overall, they're not a horrible team, and I think it will be watchable baseball, which will be a good thing.
Say Bloom's first name again.
Chaim.
You just rolled that H so perfectly that first time through.
I came from my mother.
You know, with Chris Sale, it's an interesting point, and I agree with you that you'll kind of know where the season's at that point. Either you add him for a run, which will be huge, or you just shut him down for the rest of the year, right? You're not really going to pitch him if it's not competitive. Maybe you throw him here and there to kind of ease him back into action, but you don't have to overwork him. And then I want to talk about the bullpen, too, because the Red Sox bullpen, you could argue, and so I guess I don't think the Red Sox bullpen was – how do I want to put this? The Red Sox bullpen struggled last year. They might have been worse than the starting pitchers, but part of the reason they struggled was the starting pitchers, if that made sense. Like, they were just asked to do so much. So much. Oh, it was brutal. So I'm looking for bounce back year from the bullpen because of the starting rotation, and I think they have more talent. I don't think enough people are talking about what Adam Ottavino can do. Mm-hmm. The numbers last year are ugly, but it was one bad appearance. And in that shortened season last year, I mean, that'll get you. You know, I think between him and Matt Barnes, they have a real eighth, ninth. And then I like this Sawamura guy, Hirokazu Sawamura, the guy, I don't know, he's talking about diarrhea or whatever with the media, but they got him from Japan. He's supposed to be a decent piece. Like, look, do they have the best bullpen in baseball? No. But again, like you talked about, I think they're capable. And this lineup's going to be good. Even last year, when they were the fourth worst team in the league, the Red Sox hit and they scored runs. I mean, the offense until late in the year when guys kind of checked out wasn't a major problem. They had a competent offense. It was the pitching. And I think they have competent pitching this year, and we'll see where that grows. And that can grow too. And that to me is the question of this year, right? You talked about them. What'd you say? Like 80 wins in the 80s?
85 to 88 is their ceiling.
85. Okay. So, and I think that's where they're at right now, but you look at, you know, let's see what happens with Tanner Houck. Let's see what happens with Brian Mata. And all of a sudden, you know, if you slot one of those guys in for a Martin Perez, does that increase your win total by one or two, right? And then in the bullpen, can you get Durbin Feltman up here? Is he finally ready? You know, offensively, can you replace a platooning outfielder, maybe with a guy like Jaron Duran? Like, we've talked about the Red Sox not having prospects for a while, and it wasn't, I mean, it was that they had no prospects. It wasn't quite that they had no prospects. The guys they had were just so far away that you couldn't count on them for anything. They didn't have any trade value because they were too young and they weren't going to be any immediate help. Their farm system's still not great, but the light at the end of the tunnel is there from the shedding of the farm system that happened under Dave Dombrowski. And there's a couple guys, and some of them like Houck we've already seen briefly. Right. Dalbec's another guy I think that absolutely fits into this. He's probably going to be on the opening day roster. But I think there are guys kind of on the doorstep that are unknowns that could provide a major boost. And that to me is going to be the exciting thing. I think you're going to see MLB debuts or just, you know, young guys popping up throughout the season. We're going to see Houck in the starting rotation to start. Dalbec might be in the opening day lineup. We're probably going to get Brian Mata at some point. This season we might get, you know, Jaron Duran at some point in the outfield, and it's just going to kind of be interesting to see as these guys get added to the picture throughout the year what they add.
And a lot of it also stems on like how they do with this roster as is. You obviously want to see the young guys perform. You want to see homegrown talent actually develop, especially in that pitching staff, because let's be honest, the Red Sox haven't had a lot of success when it comes to, you know, developing pitchers.
Let me throw out my stat here that I love to throw out. The last three pitchers the Red Sox have developed, they drafted, developed, and then they became all-stars in the Red Sox organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
Clay Buchholz was the most recent, which isn't great. John Lester before him. So there you're both talking about like early 2010s, right? Before those two, again, Red Sox drafted, developed, and they became an all-star as a Red Sox.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I probably said this on the show before, so you might know. Who do you think it is?
It's not Roger Clemens.
It is, in fact, Roger Clemens.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, there's been two guys since 1986 that the Red Sox have drafted and turned into all-stars as starting pitchers. They've had some good relievers in that time. Jonathan Papelbon. But yes, it would be very encouraging to see this team develop a starting pitcher. I like Tanner Houck. I think maybe he can be that guy. But like you were saying, I mean, this, and I'll let you continue. I'm sorry to cut you off, but that's going to be, you know, let's see if they can do it. Let's see if number four here, let's see if they can get him.
And that'd be awesome. And that's a starting pitcher. And that's somebody who could help out your five man rotation. And if you saw his last outing, it kind of got Red Sox Twitter all riled up. Pitched really well. It was like 4 2/3, only gave up like two hits. Tanner Houck.
Yes, he was very good. That was yesterday, I think. I was on Monday.
Yesterday. Yep. So he played well. He's got big league stuff. And you know, is he definitely on the opening day roster? I don't know if they've announced it yet.
Because Erod's basically gonna, at this point, it sounds like he's gonna open on the IL. Mm-hmm. Because of that dead arm. So if he does, Houck is kind of the consensus, you know, next man up.
And side note, Eduardo Rodriguez, if it weren't for the injuries, he could be a fourth guy on that list you just named. He could have been an all-star by now if he could stay healthy. He's got great stuff.
He came in sixth. Well, no, he wouldn't be because they didn't draft him.
They got Baltimore. Him from the Orioles. They
got him from Baltimore. Yeah. I'll pull up the trade right now. But no, there is some, like, weird conditions on that stat, obviously. Yeah. Oh, they traded him for Andrew Miller. That's right. Yeah. Andrew. Yeah. So there are some weird conditions on that statistic, to be fair. But he was, last time we saw him, he came in sixth in the Cy Young, which, by the way, I predicted on this show before that season.
You did. That was the hot take. That wasn't like you were saying, it's going to happen. It's like, this is my hot take. And that was a great hot take. It ended up being close enough.
And then he misses 2020, unfortunately, but he had a great spring. And, you know, the issue with him is the injuries. We know he's going to be good. Mm-hmm. You hate to see him start out with the dead arm. But, boy, if they can get 20, 25 starts out of him, they're going to be in good shape.
And I think starting rotation, you could put together a serviceable starting rotation, especially if both Erod and Eovaldi stay healthy this season. Big ifs. But if they do, you're in good shape, in my opinion.
So I think – if Erod's rolling and Houck turns into the real deal, does Eovaldi maybe move to the bullpen? Like, I think between Eovaldi and Martin Perez, because you also have Garrett Whitlock in the bullpen right now who can start. Between Eovaldi and Martin Perez, I wouldn't be shocked if one of those guys gets moved to the bullpen this year.
I've been on team move. I've wanted the Red Sox to strongly consider moving either Chris Sale. Yes, Chris Sale.
Oh, or Sale's Nathan Eovaldi. Well, I guess we're talking about the start of the season. Sale's an interesting one, too.
But both those guys are kind of carbon copies of each other. One of them's obviously had a better career, but they have similar stuff. They're power pitchers and they get hurt a lot. So I think if you have a power pitcher, guys who can get up in the upper 90s, who have some unreal stuff, the way to preserve them, if they're injury prone, put them in the bullpen, make them closers. I'd rather overpay for a closer than overpay for a guy who's always injured. You're going to at least get something out of that closer. So I don't think it'd be a bad idea if the starting rotation's rolling, move maybe Chris Sale into the bullpen, have him come out of the pen, or maybe Eovaldi would be a better transition. Who knows? But either of those guys, I also think that usually trade deadline time, there are relievers who are available and the asking price for those guys usually isn't too high. I'm not talking about getting, you know, an all-star caliber closer, but getting a setup man who has an ERA and, you know, the high twos, low threes, those guys are attainable come July. And I think that'll be on the table. And you know, half the battle in trying to debate whether to buy into those guys is to see how the Red Sox do with what they got until then. And I think they can get there and be in a position where you could potentially make a playoff push. And then, you know, it depends who they'd have to give up to get those guys to make that playoff push. But it'll be worth it if they're in the hunt. So because they do have a good roster. They do have a good roster. And we've seen them do a lot with, you know, teams that aren't that great on paper. So it's definitely, there's a lot of question marks. But again, you got to be optimistic with this team if you're comparing them to last season's roster.
What do you think of Adam Ottavino wearing number zero?
I don't mind the obscure numbers. What was Evan Fournier wearing last night? Like 94.
See, it's a different. It's a different sport, and zero was just different. I like it when relievers wear numbers in the 90s. They have, I have the roster up right now. Tanner Houck's supposed to wear 89. That's probably going to change. Garrett Whitlock's at 72. Darwinson Hernandez at 63. Ryan Brazier at 70.
Xander Bogaerts used to be what, like 73? Remember his first
guys
number?
Come up, they, cause yeah. Right. You know, generally their first, that's why I think Houck's going to change. Generally they change after their first year. But zeros, I mean, we haven't really seen zero in baseball. And Ottavino's a rare example of a guy who's worn it elsewhere, wore it with the Yankees. But, I mean, no Red Sox ever worn zero before. This is, like, new.
That's surprising. No, you don't. Yeah, you don't see a lot of baseball players
wear. They started letting them wear zero a couple years ago.
It makes sense, though. If anyone's going to wear number zero, it's got to be a guy with the last name Ottavino. The zero?
I guess. I am generally anti-pitchers with single-digit numbers. I think it looks weird. I'd rather he wear double zero.
Double zero would be something.
That would look cool. It's just in general, like Marcus Stroman, right, wears six.
Mm-hmm.
There's some pitcher who wears one, and it looks like the balance is off. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
No, it is bizarre. It's one of those things that I've never really thought about, but like if you see it on a jersey right. And the guy's on the mound, it's like, that doesn't look right.
You don't mention it, and then you see a pitcher wearing zero, you're wearing a single-digit number. You're like, that, you know, what's wrong here?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. That's a good point. But I don't mind it. I don't hate it. I think if anything, it's also like a marketing strategy. It's like, hey, maybe my jersey sells more if I got a weird number.
I think it's better. I'd rather have a reliever wear number zero than a starter, because I think to be a relief pitcher, specifically a closer, which Ottavino might be, right? You got to be a little weird.
Yeah.
We talk about this all the time, and I think you got to be a little weird to wear number zero. So if a pitcher is going to wear zero, I'd rather it be the closer or the setup guy than a starter. For whatever
that's true. Yeah, maybe you got to have a certain person. Like, I wonder, like, maybe Papelbon could have rocked the zero. Who knows?
See, I feel like Papelbon's the guy who would have worn an X on his jersey if he could.
Or just Roman numerals?
Well, like the guy from Longest Yard.
Oh, yeah, the Mean Machine. Yeah. Yeah, I know. The one who smoked cigarettes, right? I think that was the guy.
Don't they all? But, yeah. One of the guys. He's the big – Is it Steve Austin? Is it Stone Cold Steve Austin? Is that who he plays?
No, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Was Stone Cold Steve Austin on the – which team was he on?
Might have been a guard. Hang on, I'm pulling it up.
Because there were a ton of WWE guys in that movie. Stone Cold Steve Austin, I think, was on the guards.
Yeah, no,
and
he played Dunham. You're right.
And I think you're thinking of Goldberg. Goldberg was –
That's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, because they kind of looked alike.
Yeah. I honestly haven't seen that movie in a bit. It is a good movie, but I know it's on TV all the time. I just haven't seen it. Anyway, let's keep it on football here real quick. We got a couple more thoughts. NFL's extending to 17 games. They kind of announced over the weekend it was going to happen. It officially happened on Tuesday. And I think, Lebowitz, we're going to find out here if you can have too much of a good thing between the All-Star game that was added last year, the wild card game that was added last year, right? You get the extra playoff games. Now it's going to be a playoff game on Monday. And now they're extending the regular season. I think part of what's so great about football is every game meant something, and it was limited, and it was appointment viewing because you didn't get a ton of it. And now they're starting to extend it out, and 17 games definitely is going to mean 18 games at some point in the future. And don't tell me, oh, there's one less preseason game. Nobody watched that one anyway. I thought the NFL, they had a great schedule formula. They had a great playoff format, and just like that, in 2 years, it's all gone.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I've just resigned myself to the inevitability of it happening. You know, when it was being considered, you kind of already knew, there's a lot of money to be made there. The NFL, that's their priority. They're going to do it. What I didn't expect is that would be compounded with the extension, with the removal of the number two seed bye. And I feel like the combination of those things to be, you know, 1 year apart that's happening, it's a lot to ask for these teams. It's a tough sport. And, you know, as a fan, I'm not going to complain. It's more football, but I do wonder, how is this going to affect the longevity of certain careers? I know it's only one extra regular season game, but that stuff does make a difference. And, you know, in turn, how is that going to affect the product or the strategy for that matter? Because with more games, you just said it, it's going to make each game a little bit less important. So I do wonder what the implications are going to be beyond the obvious ones. Either way, it is what it is. I'm still going to watch. It's somewhat exciting, I guess. It's one more game. I think that that extra week, the week 18, there should be, you know, fireworks like we've seen in week 17s in years past. But I think the biggest concern for me is not that this season it's moving up from 16 to 17 games. It's what's going to come with the NFL and where will they draw the line? Because I agree with you. This isn't the end of it. The expansion of the NFL regular season or even the playoffs for that matter, I don't think we've even come close to full extent of where it's going. So at that point, maybe this doesn't affect the product all that much, but at that point it will. So there's part of me that's like, is this gonna open up a door that won't be able to be shut, and in turn affect the product all that much? So well, yeah, but it's not surprising.
They're never gonna trim games. I mean, this is what it is now, and they'll add the 18th, and who knows where it goes after there. But and I mean, the discourse around the game is never gonna be the same. Records are gonna fall because right, you have that extra game and. No more 500 teams, at least for now. That's not a thing. And the formula is a little weird, too. It's funny. The way that they're picking the 17th game is so boring. They're just like, all right, whichever out of conference division you played 2 years ago, you'll play the team that that finished in the same spot as you in your division last year, whatever. It's confusing. But like they had the perfect chance. So college football, people in New England won't believe this. College football is more popular than the NFL in a lot of ways and in a lot of places. And I think part of why that is the tradition of it. There's not a ton of tradition in the NFL when you compare it to something like college football. Mm. The NFL had the perfect chance to do something that college football does, which is the schedule, like the college football, NCAA doesn't make the schedule, right? The conferences make their own schedules against the conference teams, and the teams go out of their way to do it the rest. But there's these things that are known as protected rivalries, which are basically agreements that certain games that wouldn't otherwise be scheduled get played every year. And sometimes those change. But, you know, for instance, like Boston College, Notre Dame, there's just an agreement that that game gets played every year. Georgia, Georgia Tech, Clemson, South Carolina. These games aren't scheduled every year because of the conference. They're just, it's what's always been done. I think it would have been really cool if the NFL added protected rivalries in AFC, NFC. And I wrote about this last year for 98.5thesportshub.com. Like Jets and Giants every year, Steelers and Eagles every year, Patriots and Seahawks every year, right? Texans, Cowboys. Like, give me right, Ravens, Washington football team. You could do it geographical. You could do it off of already existing historical rivalries. You could replay some of the great Super Bowls. And then maybe every 10 years you look at it and say, all right, well, we can move these around. But I think that would have been a really cool thing to do. And people would have gotten really into it.
Yeah, this seems like there would be – that's a great idea. There's a lot of potential there. Because, you know, maybe
I had all the games listed out, and I even went with the Patriots. I had like five options. Give me, how about this one? Patriots, Washington. So I don't know how many people know this. The Washington football team was originally the Boston football team. They mm-hmm. started in Boston. They played 5 years in Boston before they moved to Washington, and they played at Fenway Park when they played in Boston. The Patriots didn't exist yet. This was in the 30s. So what you could do is you could have the Patriots play Washington every year. In the years that the game is in New England, you play at Fenway Park.
Oh, yeah. That's there a great go. Idea. Well, and you know, the only problem is you're cutting the you know, the ticket revenue in half. Well, maybe you're not. You could upsell.
You could upsell, market the hell out of it. It's an extra game. It's only once every other year. But that was like one. You could do Patriots and the Niners, and you call it the Goat Bowl. Like, I even came up with names for all the games.
Well, you could also commemorate, you know, big rivalries or big games. So, you know, in a 10-year anniversary of this Super Bowl, these two teams play each other. The possibilities are endless. This would be a marketer's dream. So
I think it would have been cool to have just like a wild card game in there.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
No, like you're saying, like figure out a way. I'm saying it like this, like.
Okay, yeah.
So I don't know what all the games are this year, but I guess Patriots Cowboys has juice because it's the Patriots and the Cowboys. But like you're gonna have the Jets and the who finished fourth in the NFC East, the Eagles, I believe, right? Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
You're going to have, so like, there's no juice there. Like, so no. have the Eagles play the Steelers, have the Jets play the Giants. Boom. There's juice there. So it just would have been cool if they did something a little different.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been a great idea. Obviously they're not doing that. It was shocker right there, but that's a really good idea. And you know what? I don't think the door closes on that sort of thing. I wonder what their rationale is to do it this way. Maybe just because of the convenience, the easiness of it. It's kind of just cut and dried.
They've always been proud of they try to keep the schedule balanced. So the better teams have harder schedules based on the previous year's record. So the idea is if you're playing a team that finished in the same spot in the division as you, you're probably playing a team that's about as good as you. So you're going to get a competitive game.
And no other league does that. Like, that's not a thing. And maybe the smaller schedule.
Well, in the other leagues, everybody plays everybody.
That's true. That's true. So I think that's an awesome idea. And that would be great for rivalries. That would keep rivalries alive.
Exactly.
And it also increase the chances of teams meeting up in the playoffs, potentially, which is another, you know, aspect of that. Or in the Super Bowl. Who knows? I you know, that happens every once in a while. But maybe if there's a rivalry between two franchises that are really well run and you keep having them go head to head, you have that rematch come playoff time, which, you know, creates more fanfare. It's another storyline built in, and it's definitely more exciting than the third place teams in the NFC East and the AFC East playing each other in that 17th game because, you know, balance. I don't know. That's kind of silly. And you think that a league that's been as, you know, savvy from a marketing standpoint and just growing the game and making the NFL what it is, but at least consider that. Maybe they did, and it didn't work out for whatever reason. But I want to close the door on that. I think that there's a real possibility that becomes more mainstream of an idea, because other people have to be thinking about this. If college does this, if you have that in college, which, you know, like it or not, is a competitor of the NFL, at least they should be thinking about it that way, even though they play on different days. You'd think that the NFL would maybe try to adopt some of that stuff and use it to their advantage. So I'm going to cross my fingers. I'm not giving up hope on that. That's a great idea.
Thank you. I appreciate that. we normally don't talk about individual games on this show just because we do one episode a week and things get dated quickly. But Evan Fournier, 0 for 10 in his Celtics debut. Look, he's a good player. He's a good addition. It's not going to stay. He's not going to struggle that much forever. But, oh, that hurt.
Yeah, it's impressive. Like, I think that's one of the more impressive feats as an athlete. That's more impressive than
he went 0 for 10. I go 0 for 10. I'm an impressive athlete.
But for guys,
I go 0 for 10 right now. I don't even have to warm up.
But 33 minutes. It's not just the 0 for 10 that's impressive. It's the fact that the rest of his stat line. Oh no, he did have 2 rebounds. Damn it.
He really didn't do much. No, he really didn't do much.
I thought he had no rebounds, no assists. That's what I originally saw. Oh no, he had 2 blocks, 2 steals. So he contributed defensively.
He didn't, like, his 0 for 10 isn't the worst moment for the Celtics from that game.
Was the market smart?
Yes. And okay, so for those who didn't see it, basically, who was it? I think it was Peyton Pritchard tied up Brandon Ingram on a jump ball, right? So the Pelicans have the ball. Pritchard ties him up. It's a jump ball. There's 0.3 seconds left on the shot clock. If the Pelicans win the tip, they basically get a 24-second violation, okay? So the tip's at midcourt. Ingram doesn't jump for it because what's he going to do? It's going to be a turnover anyway. Don't give him the side out of bounds. Just let them win the tip. So Pritchard wins the tip back to Marcus Smart, who's standing like at the back end of the Celtics logo. So like just beyond half court. One motion catches and just flings the ball at the basket. It hits off the shot clock because he, I guess, had the shot clock backwards and he thought that it was going to be a violation on the Celtics. There was no need for him to do that. And then, of course, because he's Marcus Smart, he starts explaining himself after to Kemba Walker. I loved that moment. I think we all needed that moment. We all as Celtics fans needed to laugh. And then, by the way, Marcus Smart gets ejected later in the game. Like, it was just the perfect Marcus Smart game. But he's making great defensive plays in between all of this. I loved all of it. I, you know, shout out to Marcus Smart. I'm still firmly on the Marcus Smart bandwagon. Oh,
God, I think you're one of the few and proud on the Marcus Smart train. That guy, I mean, oof. The fact that he's just so, what's the word I'm looking for?
Sporadic.
He's sporadic. That's it. He's sporadic, mainly offensively. Both sides of the ball, he's sporadic. Being sporadic defensively plays much more to your favor than being sporadic offensively. Last night showed you why. The fact that he remains so confident, though, I envy the hell out of him. That he could just, he does things on the basketball court. I'm like, what the hell is he doing? And then he'll go back out there and he'll do the same type of stuff, except he'll actually hit the shot. And you're just like, this guy has some great short-term memory. Like, just being on the court, just forgetting what happened last possession, just going out there and continuing to play with confidence. You got to respect it, but it frustrates the hell out of me to watch him play. And, I've been on the boat of maybe you should trade him. Maybe he's somebody who you can get some assets for. It might not be worth it, but I used to be firmly in the camp of Marcus Smart is the heart and soul of the Celtics. I don't know if that's as much of the case anymore, especially since the Celtics are now, again, sub 500. And a lot of it is because of his play, in my opinion, even though he was out for a lot of the season. He doesn't provide what he used to for the C's. And it frustrates the hell out of me. And he had that the meme that's created out of that. Like, he messes up, and then it looks like he's yelling at Kemba. Because Kemba's like, what the hell are you doing? It's just wild. It's crazy. At this point, you just got to sit back and laugh. And hopefully this game's more of a one-off and Evan Fournier gets more comfortable and doesn't go 0-for-10 and Marcus Smart doesn't, shoot the ball from half court when you have a new shot clock. But either way, it doesn't appear to be the Celtics' year. And certain things like what you just referenced, you just got to sit back and laugh at.
So let me say this in defense of Marcus Smart. I think in a lot of ways, Marcus Smart embodies everything that's wrong with the Celtics right now. But in the same breath, Marcus Smart embodies what the Celtics need to dig themselves out of this hole. You mentioned the confidence and the confidence he plays with in the fight and the aggression on the defensive end. The Celtics are in this spot more so than not because of their defense. Brad Stevens said as much last night. The Celtics need to come back. They need to be confident. They need to be aggressive. They need to play strong defense. That's Marcus Smart when he's at his best. So I would say Marcus Smart, as bad as he's looked at times since coming back from the calf injury, and let's not forget how well he was playing before that. But I know he struggled recently, but he is kind of the key to unlocking what the Celtics need if they're going to turn this thing around, not just this year, but overall.
I wish he would shoot less. I just wish he wasn't as much a part of the offense.
But that's...
It comes with it.
It is what it is. Right. Yeah. It comes with it. But you have a top five defensive guard in the game.
Sure. Yeah.
So 100%. It's to me. Look, now that you have a guy like Evan Fournier, right? In the past, they didn't need Smart to do as much offensively because they had that extra offensive weapon in Hayward. They give him up for the TPE. It forces Smart into more of an offensive role. Now that you get Fournier, it's essentially in exchange for Hayward, right? Because that's where you use the TPE. It should take some of the offensive responsibility off Marcus Smart. Remember, they didn't have Jaylen Brown on Monday night, and I believe that they'll have him Wednesday night. I think I saw the injury report that he's supposed to be back in that, oddly enough, Romeo Langford finally is going to play, maybe. But
I also bet you Kemba Walker's going to be sitting Wednesday night, too.
Nope, because he's not back-to-back. Oh, no, he's true. Playing. He's playing. He only sits back-to-backs. He's playing. So they should be pretty full go, assuming Jaylen plays. He's questionable. I'm looking at it right now, as of the time we're recording this. So it's going to be interesting. Let's not forget that Luke Kornet is the future of the franchise, too.
He's getting he's been getting pumped up a little bit. That's fun to watch. He's looked good. But I do think, you got to wait and see what this team looks like as a unit. And Jaylen Brown is, the second most important player on the Celtics. So you can't really make a full judgment yet. Hopefully they're fine. They're fine. Their stride. But again, I've said this before. I think the biggest problem is it's just none of them have really bought in. And you can blame Brad Stevens. I think he's, definitely at fault for some of this. I think after this season, they need to reevaluate whether he's the guy for the future for that head coaching role. You can blame Danny Ainge for not putting together a good enough roster. You can blame the young guys for not carrying their weight. Either way, I guess we do have to wait and see, and maybe something clicks. All it takes is getting into the postseason, and if they play well enough, who knows? But that's not going to happen. They're just frustrating to watch. They're just really frustrating to watch, and you hope they salvage something. And I think at this point, the most important thing for the Celtics is just finishing the year strong. So at the very least, they're not going into the offseason on a completely sour note, and there's something to look forward to. There's some optimism for the future, because they should be optimistic. They got a couple of young guys who are all stars, who are great players, maybe a future MVP in one of them. But it's just disappointing, man. It's just disappointing. And last night, it just was another example as to why people are so frustrated with this team.
I love what you had a quick UFC thought here you wanted to get in.
Sure, I guess. Yeah, Francis Ngannou knocked out Stipe Miocic over the weekend in a heavyweight bout, and now it's depends who he's going to go up against, but whoever it is, it's going to be a good fight. Derrick Henry, John Bones Jones. Everyone wants to see him go up against John Bones Jones. But this is kind of a recurring final thought for me, and for us, I'd say. The heavyweight division in the UFC is starting to look really good. The UFC in general is just grade A entertainment. And it has surpassed boxing by a long shot, in my opinion. Francis Ngannou is one of the guys who's helping it get to that point. He's not somebody who you hear a lot from. He's, I believe he's French, but he's an animal. The guy's a beast, and he's just learning how to fight. If you listen to the experts, he's somebody who's beaten a lot of good fighters, but simply just due to raw athleticism and being super strong and, again, athletic. He beat a top-notch heavyweight fighter, one of the best of all time, let alone the best right now, in pretty compelling fashion. And now he's going up against John Bones Jones, who's going to be up in a weight class. He's gaining weight. One of the most skilled UFC fighters of all time, another one, who has obviously had his troubled past. I think this has a real opportunity to be a huge fight for the UFC. And if you're a fighting fan, you're not going to want to miss it. I think we're witnessing the rise in a huge sport. And we've already been witnessing it. People know Conor McGregor. People know, you know, Khabib and all these other guys. And people remember the 2000s UFC, which wasn't quite as big as it is now. It's been on the rise. But when you have a heavyweight class in which there are people who you're going to be paying money to watch on your TV, that's huge. Marketable, great athletes, huge for any sport. It's even bigger for combat sports because it's all about the individual. It's not about the team. And over the weekend, you saw why a guy in Francis Ngannou is you know, part of the future of the UFC. And I'm just looking forward to seeing what's next. And I'm hoping and praying. Not that I would be disappointed, all that disappointed if Derrick Henry fought him, but I'm hoping and praying that Derrick Lewis. I'm hoping and praying.
I was gonna say, I think Derrick Henry would be pretty good at UFC.
Derrick Henry would be fun to watch. Derrick Lewis, I meant, who also has a great Instagram page for anyone who's trying to check that out. But I'm hoping and praying that it's John Bones Jones, because there's a great storyline there, and more than anything, it'll just be an incredible fight to watch. So, get on it, Dana White. And he's usually good about that stuff. So I'm sure he will try to make it work and make the money work for Jones.
And I'll drop. I just got a quick thought. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the boat stuck in the Suez Canal, but I guess that ship has sailed. it's pretty cool. They got it out. Awesome engineering feat. We'll see kind of how they clear it up. But Lebowitz, you got any final thoughts on the Ever Given?
It's done. It's off and running, and now no more $9 billion being wasted a day.
Still got to ease the traffic jam now. That's the next problem.
Well, now they got to get everyone through there. I wonder what how many billions they're losing now, because it's still probably pretty astronomical number. So it's just crazy to me. I just can't get over that. You know, we live in this massive planet with this global economy, and you know, the quickest way, there's no other way to get into the Mediterranean, which you know, which borders a ton of major European and Asian, Middle Eastern countries and African countries. There's no other way than to go through that tiny little canal. And God forbid something gets stuck there, a big boat, a giant cargo boat the size of the Empire State Building, $9 billion a day. So I think it's crazy. They need to maybe make another man-made canal. So if this ever does happen again, you have a change, you know, a different route. But I also, and one more thought on that. Am I really dumb for thinking that boats are like outdated technology? I don't know.
You're not gonna, I mean, think about how, I think people don't understand how big that boat is, right? Because you're thinking, why can't we just use a plane?
Well, yeah, yeah, and that's the reason. That's why I understand. Like, no, think about Alex, a plane you're an idiot.
The size of the Empire State Building.
Yeah, you can't do that.
To move all that, or you would need more planes, and then you're just tying up airports, and we don't need to do more of that. I don't like. Maybe if you made like a intercontinental subway. Like, ooh, under the ocean, just like a hyperspeed train that could go between places, and you could take it on trucks from there.
Someone needs to call Elon Musk.
That does sound like something Elon Musk would do.
I think he's working on that for transportation of people, but why not cargo? Why not,
I would say cargo's less risky, right? If something goes wrong, if this train going 500 miles an hour crashes underneath the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and it's full of people, that's a tragedy. If it's full of, because I saw a report that something that was stuck in the canal was sex toys, it's less of a tragedy.
Yeah, well, it depends who you ask.
I said less of a tragedy. I didn't say not a tragedy.
But to some, powerful people, I guarantee you losing $9 billion a day, not that it's all going to one person or one company.
Bro, that's not all in sex toys.
No.
It's not 9 billion. Like, they're not exclusively shipping sex toys through the Suez Canal.
If that were the case, then they would have been bearing the lead big time. That would have been something. But I don't think that's – yeah, maybe that is the case. Who knows? Maybe they're trying to keep that under wraps. No, I obviously not. But $9 billion in goods, there's a lot of people who would be like, no, I'd rather people die than have all that stuff just help.
Yeah, probably.
But I get your point. I get your point. Maybe they should be doing the underground thing for cargo instead. But no, I can answer my own question. Am I an idiot for thinking that boats are outdated? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. I am an idiot because it is convenient. It is, you can't make any type of other vehicle that's that big, and that efficient. So I get it. But I don't know. Make a wider canal. Why don't you?
I guess they're, yeah, widen the canal more. But hey, if people just thought these are good, you know, that's the whole crux of invention, is you need to try to get rid of something. So if you think you can replace them, like if you have a good idea to replace them, go for it. But I think right now the best we have. All right, that's enough boat talk. We'll wrap this up. We'll be back next week. New show. We'll have baseball. We'll have basketball. We'll have hockey. We'll have football. NFL drafts coming up as well. In the meantime, check us out online, clnsmedia.com, under the podcast tab, and follow us on Twitter at Calling the Podcast. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barr. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.